There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Ben Solak, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Kelly, Danny Heifetz, and Greg Horlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, which is, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, which includes which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are bad, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. That is the Ringer NFL Draft Show. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
It's the Ringer's Philly Special, presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hungry dogs run fast. And that's the sea. I'm an
It's truly a Philly thing here.
Hello and welcome to the Ringer's Philly Special. I am Ben Solak, not the voice that you usually hear at the top of this show. Shiel Kapadia off this week, enjoying a beautiful vacation, we hope. And so I was tasked with filling the spot for the Eagles this week. I was excited to do so because it is time to talk draft. We are less than a month out from the NFL draft, have yet to really talk prospects for the Eagles so far on this feed. And I brought on with me the Ringer's resident NFL draft expert, the author of the NFL draft at theringer.com, the best NFL draft guide on the planet, my co-host on the Ringer NFL draft show. You know him, you love him. He is Danny Kelly. What's up, DK?
What's happening, man? Thanks for having me. Whoa, my voice cracked a little bit. Fighting off a cold. Sorry about that.
That's okay. An inglorious start here on the Ringer's Philly Special, but I'm certain you'll quickly recover. DK and I are on the Ringer NFL Draft Show together, which is a whole separate feed. You subscribe to it. It's great. We're on there with Danny Heifetz and Craig Horlbreck, who are DK's compatriots on the Ringer Fantasy Football Show in season. We talk about the whole class. We talk about the top of the draft. We talk about the quarterback. So if you are interested in the draft, if you're watching this class, want to hear about the prospects, you should check us out on that feed. This feed specifically, DK, is for the Philadelphia Eagles. And what I want to do is I want to introduce to our listeners those prospects that might be the Eagles' first overall pick. Eagles this year picking 22 overall, which I get wrong constantly because they picked 23 overall a few years ago, and I keep thinking it's 23. They're picking 22 overall, back end of the first round. Obviously, super liable to move, as Howie Roseman will forever be, move up and move down. So we don't know that this will be where they finally make that pick, but there are some good names at the positions that they do need. And so I came with five names prepared. You came with five names prepared. We do not know whether or not we're overlapping. So maybe we will, and we'll give some extra attention to a certain guy. I didn't tell DK, make sure you hit this position, that position. I just asked him, hey, five prospects for the Eagles that you would like in the first round. List them, and let's introduce them to the Philly Special listeners. So DK, please start us off. Your first player that is a candidate for the Eagles pick at 22 overall.
All right, so this guy fills a need for the Eagles. In most of the mocks I've seen, he's kind of in that area. That's where he goes off the board. I'm going to go with Cooper DeJean, a corner out of Iowa. Now,
he's the top name on my list as well.
Perfect. I understand that the Eagles, as I understand it, have not taken a corner in the first round since 2002. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but
it was a great year for me, man. That was the year I went to kindergarten, started making friends. It was huge.
That's awesome. That was my second year in college. So we're about the same generation here. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously, they may end up not going this direction. This may be something that actually is meaningful, or maybe it was just sort of a product of how the drafts have gone for them in the past. I do think this is a big enough need for the Eagles, and Cooper DeJean is versatile enough to play like multiple spots in that secondary if they need him to do that. So I don't know. I just like a lot of things about Cooper DeJean. I think he's very, very athletic. He's twitchy. He's big. He's physical. And like I said, he's versatile. He could contribute on special teams. There's this new kickoff rule that's very exciting that he could maybe be involved in that too. I don't know. He just fits. He just checks a lot of boxes, I think, for the Eagles. So this wouldn't be a big surprise to me to see him go at 22.
Yeah. So the Eagles haven't drafted a corner in the first round since 2002. So I think that's largely, like, large is probably the wrong word. I think that's a decent portion of that is circumstance. Certainly true that the Eagles feel like they can find corner in other spots, or maybe they feel corner is a really hard position to evaluate, which it generally is considered to be. And accordingly, it's just like not worth spending that early of a pick on a position where you're kind of just throwing darts anyway. Right. And so I think there's some veracity to it. I think some of it is just coincidence and happenstance. The main thing to understand is that the world we live in 2024 is not the world we lived in 2004. Like, one of the things that the Eagles do well in their front office is constantly update and come to new opinions about the edges in the league. See, right, Saquon, right, Barkley extension as an example of, like, they're willing to break their own rules. They're willing to experiment on things. So I don't think anything should be taken hard and fast with the Eagles draft history with Howie Roseman in the building. I do think that corner is very much on the table. As I said, my first player on this list was also Cooper DeJean, corner out of Iowa, 6'1", 210. DK, there's a lot of talk about DeJean potentially moving to safety at the NFL level. Eagles obviously have a needed outside corner, have a needed nickel corner, Avante Maddox off the team, and have a needed safety. Was DeJean at the top of your list because of the versatility? Where do you see him playing in the league? Where would you kind of start him when you put him on the Eagles roster?
I mean, I think the versatility is sort of a cherry on top. I don't necessarily think that's why I liked him the most. I liked him at corner, honestly. I know that there's a big discussion right now whether he's going to be a corner in the NFL, because there has not been a first-round corner that's been drafted into the NFL in forever. It's kind of a white cornerback that is.
Right, I was about to say, DK, there's a lot of first-round corners.
There has been many corners drafted in the first round. None of them have been white, I think, going back, you know, several decades. And so, obviously, there is the thought that maybe he will end up being a safety in the league. I think he has the size and the physicality and sort of the traits to play safety or nickel corner. But honestly, I liked him at corner. Like I said, I liked him out on the outside. I think he has the reactive athleticism to mirror and coverage. He's physical. Like I said, he has good ball skills. Let's see here. He had 7 interceptions over the past 2 seasons with 13 passes defense. So obviously, he has a pretty good feel for playing the football at the catch point. You know, there's some instincts there. He's just a really, really good all-around athlete. I think he can play at that position. I think it's just a cherry on top.
Yeah.
If he can, you know, if they want to use him in the slot, if they want to have him, you know, travel with a guy that he can do that, he can play in the slot, he can do kind of, you know, whatever they ask him to do. I think he has that total skill set. So, no, the versatility was not the reason I did it. I think it's just a cherry on top.
Yeah. So I agree. Like, I think when I watch DeJean, I see a player who can survive a corner on the outside in the NFL. I think that he can be an outside corner in the NFL. Now, when you measure him relative to the rest of this class, there's Toledo corner Quinyon Mitchell. There's Alabama corner Terrion Arnold, both of whom we expect to go before the Eagles pick. There's a couple of guys we might talk about later. But when you measure him relative to the other first round corners, there's no doubt that, like, his advantages, what he does better than those guys, is often like size, tackling. He's really, really good in run defense. Like, he's an excellent run fitter. He'll take on blocks. He will key on the run fast. And he played a lot of zone coverage at Iowa. And so when you're measuring him against those guys, he just has safety traits relative to them, right? And so I feel like some of the DeJean to safety conversation is just the relative measure. Because while he's stronger than Terrion Arnold in zone coverage, and while he's bigger than Nate Wiggins, the question isn't like, oh, is he more of a safety than these guys? The question is, does he have enough like quickness and man coverage technique and ability on the outside to survive there? Like, that's the actual question. Doesn't really matter what the other guys do. And the answer to me is like unquestionably yes. Like, he very clearly can be on the outside. Now, if you put him out there and it doesn't work, then you can talk about the transition. Eagles fans will remember Rasul Douglas when he came out of West Virginia. So 6'2", 210, zone cover defender, great ball skills, length. And all everybody talked about was maybe move this guy to safety. And it never happened. It never would have worked. They never like treated him well as a developmental corner. They never like gave him the opportunity to grow. He was terrible here. He went, bounced around 4 different practice squads, lands in Green Bay. Green Bay puts him in a zone scheme that'll work for him, gives him a few reps. Rasul Douglas is a plus starter. He's corner one in Buffalo, right? Like, there are ways to make this guy work. Now, if you want to be a 100% man coverage team, you probably want to go a different direction, but I don't think the Eagles and Vic Fangio want to be that. I do think this sort of player that fits their system. I do think the size is handy on the outside. I like DeJean as a corner for the Eagles as well.
Yeah. I was just looking at some of the stats for DeJean. First of all, his background is pretty interesting. He's from a small town in Iowa where he was like the freakiest athlete the state of Iowa has basically ever seen. He won the 100 meters as a senior, as a sprinter. He was also a really good long jumper. He played baseball, basketball, and track. Like, this is a very
senior season. He averaged 26-8-7. I just want DeJean on the Eagles for the off season hooping social content.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Where it's just him just like schooling the rest of the team on the court. It'd be a good bit.
Yeah. So I think that's obviously just intriguing. But like, if you look at his numbers, according to PFF, he had 15 run stops, which was tied for first in the country. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not run stops, just stops, which they define, I believe, as just like unsuccessful plays for the offense. It's kind of like a success rate type deal. So he was very good, you know, coming up and playing downhill. He had a 85 plus grade as a run defender, which was the only corner in the country. So like you said, he's really good against the run. I liked how how hard he works to get off blocks and things like that. Yeah. Like a lot of corners will just sort of, you know, try and force the ball back inside or whatever. They did their job, technically speaking, and they forced the ball back inside, but they're not like necessarily trying to stick their face in the fan and like make a tackle. He was very aggressive, getting off blocks, trying to come in, hit the guy. So yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of things to like about him. I think he is, you know, like I said, he can play multiple positions. That's a good thing. But I think he start him out at the corner and see if it works is what I would do.
Yeah. If you made me right now say, Ben, you have to make the pick at 22 for the Eagles, you have to write a name that's likely to be there. If mm-hmm. he's not there, you could take anybody. What name are you writing down? I probably would go a little safer than DeJean. He might go earlier, but DeJean is a name I'd want to write. Where I'm like, I'm pretty confident he'd be there, and I'm pretty confident it'd be good for the Eagles. I like that he can potentially bump to nickel and bump to safety, on who else they get and what his skill set is. Like, he makes a lot of sense for them. So he was also my top guy. I'll go to my second guy then, and we'll just kind of, you know, we'll go this back and forth, seeing how many we overlap on. The second dude for me is Troy Fontenot, the tackle/guard out of Washington.
I like
on your
that.
List or no?
He was not on my list.
Excellent. All right. So we've talked a lot, Sheil and I have on this pod, about the state of the Eagles' offensive line room and kind of the musical chairs that are going to happen as a result of Jason Kelce's retiring. Right now you have Cam Jurgens moving into center. The presumed starting guard will now be Tyler Steen, who the Eagles drafted last year out of Alabama. Now, Steen played tackle at Bama, but he was viewed for much of the process as a guy who was going to kick into guard. And the Eagles have always liked this. Under Jeff Stoutland, they've really liked to play tackle-sized bodies at guard, right? You think about what they had with Brandon Brooks. Isaac Seumalo was a tackle-sized body. Even Landon Dickerson, who's always been an interior offensive lineman, is one of the biggest interior offensive linemen that's kind of around the block. He played some tackle in college when he needed to. So they like that big bodies there. So now you have Cam Jurgens at center, which is kind of like an unknown. Like, how exactly good is he going to be at the pivot? He's had experience at guard, but like, what's he going to be like at center? You have Tyler Steen, who is a total unknown. You barely see him play any ball. Behind them, you lose Jack Driscoll in free agency. You lose Sua Peta in free agency. So like, right now, your interior offensive linemen coming off the depth chart are Matt Hennessy, Fred Johnson, Johnson and Raven Clark are also your backups at tackle. Like, they just kind of have a lot less depth on offensive line than they used to, and they have uncertainty at multiple starting positions. This is as much of a point of transience as we've seen on the Eagles' offensive line in quite some time. So I do think offensive line is a serious consideration for them in the first round. An excellent fit for them would be Troy Fontenot, the tackle out of Washington. Very similar to Tyler Steen in that he was a college tackle at a high-caliber program, a ton of starts, but is expected to move to guard at the NFL level because of his size. So he has, I think, one college start at guard, but has mostly played tackle over the course of his entire career. Fontenot, man. If you want to find an Eagles offensive lineman, just find a guy who moves weird, where you watch him move and you're like, hot dog, like, big man's moving fast. He's not supposed to go that way. And that is exactly Troy Fontenot. There is a clip, because Jeff Stoutland always runs the offensive line drills at the combine.
Wave drill or whatever, where he's pointing in different directions.
He runs all the drills. Like, he's there or whatever. But I think it was like cameras caught Stoutland watching Fontenot, or somebody like reported that just like Stoutland every rep was just watching Fontenot, just like, whoo,
like, heart, like his eyes turned into hearts or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So Fontenot, he's listed like 6'4", 310, right? And he's a little bit like, he carries his mass well. He's a little bit of like a thinner frame. He definitely looks more like a guard. He has guard length. But he is as smooth as butter on the kick slide. He is an excellent redirect player and change of direction guy. You see him on poles. You see him in space tagging guys at the second level. This is a high caliber mover at offensive line. And then the positional versatility, the experience at tackle, tends to be the sort of thing that the Eagles really, really prioritize. The Eagles have shown that they're willing to take the Pac-12 guys, right? They took Andre Dillard in the first round, obviously didn't work, but they are comfortable drafting offensive linemen from that conference, which some teams aren't. I think that Fontenot is like the ideal insurance bet against Steen. He's a good Lane Johnson heir apparent. He is just solve a lot of problems for you guy. And I expect him to go around this range. So Troy Fontenot to the Eagles, that's one of the offensive linemen I'm watching for sure.
The reason, maybe there's a little bit of bias here. The reason I didn't put him on my list is because I don't think he's getting past the Seahawks at 16. If he's there.
You and I might have to do a little fight over Troy Fontenot over the next month.
I know. So for the record, I'm a Seahawks fan. He's the type of guy that I really want the Seahawks to take. And basically for all the reasons you laid out, extremely smooth mover. The way he plays, like his demeanor is so calm and under control at all times. He's just one of those guys that never looks like he's panicking, never looks like he doesn't know what's happening. Like, you know, sometimes you'll see offensive linemen, it doesn't really know, they don't look like they know where the pressure is supposed to be coming from. That never happened with Fontenot. He's always just calm, collected, calm helmet, calm lower body, just doesn't panic. He's good with his hands. He's a good hand fighter. He's aggressive in the run game. Like you said, he did get a start at guard, I believe, left guard in college. So he has inside outside versatility. Some people have even talked a little bit about him being a center. They think he could play that position if they asked him to. But yeah, I think, again, the only reason I didn't say put Fontenot on my list is because I think he's going to go a little bit earlier. I think the NFL really likes this guy, especially after that combine performance where he was just the smoothest and most fluid athlete probably at the offensive line position. So, yeah, the Seahawks at 19, or sorry, at 16, you're going to have to like trade up to 15 probably if you want to get Fontenot, I think. Or Fautanu, I think is how you say it.
Fautanu, it's got its fourth syllable.
I'm not 100% sure, but yeah. So anyways, along the same lines, I'll go with my next guy here. Mm-hmm. And I think this is sort of like a similar thought process as Fautanu, and that's Jackson Powers Johnson, the center / interior lineman from Oregon. Basically, as you laid out, like there's some uncertainty on the interior offensive line. I also just think like the Eagles philosophically don't mind stacking positions and getting stronger at positions that are important. You know what I mean? Like offensive line and defensive line. This is very important throughout the season. This is not a position group that you only want to have one option. And so, you know, going from that point of view where we want to be able to have our best five guys on the offensive line at all times. Jackson Powers Johnson, I think, is an interesting one. He also fits that mold as a little bit bigger guy. He's like 330 something pounds.
If he played center for the Eagles would get heavier at center by about 45 pounds in one swift transition.
Yeah. So, it's another thing where you figure out where he best fits. I think he could play any of the three interior offensive line positions. Good footwork, really good length. He can kind of do the reach and seal thing where you pivot your body quickly at the snap and you get in front of a guy on the play side of a run. I think just there's a lot of his tenacity and his personality, I think, fit what they're trying to do on the offensive line in Philly. So he's just the type of guy, the versatility and size kind of stuck out to me as a potential fit for the Eagles. I don't know for sure if they're going to want to go first round interior offensive lineman. Because that kind of goes against like the positional value argument that you use with the Eagles a lot, but I do think just his versatility makes him very valuable.
I mean, they went Landon with a near first round pick. They went Cam Jurgens with a second round pick when they didn't have room for him. They went Steen with a late second, early three. I can never remember if Steen was either.
He was
they had
third.
Sidney Brown and Tyler Steen, and they drafted Sidney Brown with the last pick in the second round and Tyler Steen with the first pick in the third round. I can never remember which one went where. It is extremely frustrating.
Steen was the 65th pick in the third round.
And Sidney was 64. It was the last pick in the second round. I'm like
66 is 65 and 66. They went right back to
Frick. Whatever. Okay. I think that Jackson Powers Johnson is an interesting player for them. The thing that concerns me about Johnson to the Eagles is it would be such a departure of what they have looked at center, right? Just from looking at Kelsey and then Kelsey into Jurgens, it's just like, man, if they went for Powers Johnson, it would be such a departure from what they've previously had at center. Now, with that said, the reason that they had Kelsey at center was, I think, less like, man, we really think like this position should have 290 pounders, and more like, holy smokes, this guy's unbelievable, right? It was just like, they had a Hall of Famer. So it was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. It's rather the drafting of Cam Jurgens, who's a obviously like a lighter, you know, movement center. Mm-hmm. Even the Matt Hennessy acquisition. Like, Hennessy's a guy who's in the Garrett Bradbury, Jason Kelce mold, where he's just going to play under 300 pounds. Like, it just seems that, like, they're at this point, they've built so much of their running game over the last 10 years, Jeff Stoutland working with Jason Kelce, around the idea of having a center who can, like, run like a fullback, that if they were to add Powers Johnson, I'd have to imagine they're doing it as a guard. Now, that now fits like the Landon Dickerson conversation, where it's like, okay, like, Dickerson was like, what, is he a center? Is he a guard? Whatever. This is a huge guy, and we're going to play him at guard. So I could see Powers Johnson as guard, but I would be surprised if they added him as center, just because of the way they've been philosophically.
That's a very interesting point. Just not to take this off track here, but if you're looking for a guy that kind of fits that mold a little bit more, Zach Frazier from West Virginia. Yeah. Might fit that archetype a little bit more. He's a little bit more undersized, very quick feet, former wrestler, so obviously he understands leverage and positioning and body control, strength. So he might be a guy. I don't know if he's going to be a first round pick, but early second round pick type guy. If the Eagles decide to trade back a little bit, Zach Frazier might fit that mold a little bit better. So just keep that name in mind too.
No, I very much agree. I think in terms of the top centers that I've looked at, I absolutely think if they were to draft the guy and be like, we need a Jason Kelce replacement, I absolutely unequivocally think that it would be of the top dudes. It would be Frazier, who's the West Virginia kid. The late round guy that I think they're going to be interested in is the Wisconsin kid, which is Tanner Bortolini. All right.
Oh yeah, the super athlete. Yeah.
Yeah, which I can't say his name seriously. now it's weird. Like, a lot of the undersized centers in this class are tall. Like, Bortolini is 6'4". Bo Limmer, the Arkansas kid, is 6'4". So none of them are like super short, but Bortolini, man, 4.94 40-yard dash, 88th percentile vertical jump, 93rd percentile broad jump. Bortolini can move, dude. That's the sort of guy who, like, all right, if they're in the fourth, fifth round, like, what if we just hit on another Kelce? Like, we just find a moving guy on day three. Bordelini out of Wisconsin is the name that I would tag.
Yeah, that was Jurgens' deal too, right? Like, he's super athlete, one of the best athletes at interior offensive line that we've seen in a long time.
That is correct. Yeah, Cam Jurgens, 4.92 40-yard dash, 171 10-yard split. He doesn't have official agility times up on Mock Draftable. I'm pretty sure he did them at his pro day, and they were sick, if memory serves. Please don't quote me on that. But yeah, they are looking for high caliber movers at center typically.
That makes sense.
I will give you my third name here. We're going to introduce a third position. I think this being the position that I'm most a question mark about for the Eagles in terms of their need, and that's pass rusher, right? Mm-hmm. As of right now, Josh Sweat is on the roster, right? They restructured Josh Sweat's contract. They said Josh Sweat's going to stay for a year. Excellent. Congrats to Josh Sweat. Also, as of right now, Hassan Reddick is on the roster. They delayed Hassan Reddick's, you know, option guarantee until April 1st. Like, they still have more time to trade for him. Maybe they do trade him. Maybe they don't trade him. They signed Bryce Huff, right? Big 3-year, $51 million contract. Right now to be edge 3, presumably to be edge 2 once they move on from Hassan Reddick. Again, still has not happened yet. Brandon Graham is back for a year, all right? Yep. Nolan Smith is a first-round pick. Is on the roster. As of right now, the Eagles just emphatically do not need a pass rusher. However, given the conversations around Sweat, who's got 1 year left on his deal, given the conversations around Reddick, who I still expect to be traded before the draft, given the fact that Brandon Graham is only back for like kind of a 1 year swan song retirement, whatever.
Right, right.
Given the uncertainty around Nolan Smith, who you barely saw play last year and wasn't super impactful when he did, they could draft an edge. How are they going to get all these guys to the 53-man roster? I don't know. Ask somebody else. Not me, but I absolutely think edge is something they view as a need. And in their head, like, they want to be prepared for a universe where their starting edge group next year is Bryce Huff, rookie, Nolan Smith. Like, that it's Bryce Huff and then rookie Nolan Smith fighting for job 2, where it's like there's no Brandon Graham and no Josh Sweat and no Hassan Reddick. They want to be prepared for that world. Accordingly, I highlighted UCLA edge Leatu Latu as a player I think they could target at 22. Is he on your list?
He's on my list.
Heck yeah. All right. I'm glad you and I see eye to eye about this potential investment at edge rusher. Latu, man. You know, Hassan Reddick, 245, Bryce Huff, 248, Nolan Smith, 239, right? They've had these lighter edge rushers. But in Josh Sweat, they do have a bigger body, play 255, 260 about. Brandon Graham plays about 250, 255. Leatu is 265, right? And I do think that while they Harry Roseman tends to be comfortable going lighter at edge rusher. I do think the Vic Fangio defense needs at least one edge rusher who's got some sand in his pants. And Latu certainly is that. There's a lot of flashy Latu, win with the hands, win with explosiveness, high caliber rusher, a polished rusher, a high effort rusher, and all of it is true. One thing that does not get talked about enough with Latu is that he is a high effort and high caliber run defender at edge rusher. One of the things that really makes me feel confident in his on-field play, because I don't think he's going to have as easy of a time winning with his hands at the NFL level, winning with explosiveness. I think he beat up on some bad Pac-12 tackles. But one thing that makes me confident in his ability to grow at the NFL level is that he gets run defense. He's able to play low. He's able to play through contact. He will be able to stay on the field because he does the dirty work on first and second down that earns you those third down reps, that earns you those pass rush reps. Now, the hand usage is true, right? Like, he is the most technically refined pass rusher in this class without question. If you made me bet on a guy in this class to be a double-digit sack guy in year one, have multiple seasons of double-digit sacks, I'm betting on Latu before Dallas Turner, the Alabama kid, before Jared Verse, the Florida State kid. Now, Ben, if that's true, why is he there at 22? Presumably Turner and Verse are going before him. Well, Latu, who's initially a Husky with Washington, he suffered a neck injury in 2020, go Dawgs, and medically retired from football, all right, in April of 2021.
Slight red flag there.
Rare to have a player who medically retired from football be in the NFL draft. And that's because Latu entered the transfer portal, transferred to UCLA, got a second opinion, unmedically retired from football, and then has been really, really good for the Bruins over the last couple of seasons. The Eagles, I think, are going to be willing to take a risk on a player like this, and I believe that because of Josh Sweat, who's in the building and who had like massive knee concerns, injury red flags. How long is he going to have of a career? Is he always going to have injury risk? Like, all of that was true of Sweat. They took him in the fourth round, right, much later. All of that is also true of Latu as well. And there's a chance when we get down to brass tacks, we're talking about Latu at 22. Dude, there's a chance Latu is around for a long, long time because 18 of the 32 teams have medically red flagged and won't draft him. 20 of the teams, 22, 24 of the teams. Like, you don't know how many teams are going to have the guy on the board. And so I do think Latu will be on the board for the Eagles because they tend to be willing to take some medical flag risks, right?
Right, right.
I do think that he fits a position of need for them. I personally comp him to Bradley Chubb, the edge rusher with Miami, who came from Denver, who played with Vic Fangio in Denver, Bradley Chubb, and then played for Vic Fangio in Miami. That sort of a player, right, who's like, maybe he's not always going to be 14 sacks, 16 sacks. He plays all three downs for you, play with his hand in the dirt. He's going to be the big end for you, let you put your speed rush on the outside. Like, Latu fits that bill to me nice and neat. And so Latu, I think it would be a really, really interesting add to the Eagles and tell you something about their edge room if they take him at 22.
Yeah, I love this one. I think so. He's actually truly one of my favorite players in this draft. I think that
he's so good, dude.
There's a huge concern that the medicals are going to play a part in where he lands and, you know, how long his career is going to last. I don't have any of that information. From what I've heard and gleaned, his combine went fine. There wasn't like a huge issue with his medical checks, but of course, every team is different and you have multiple different, you know, doctors for every team. So, you know, we'll see what happens there in terms of how teams grade him in that sense. But, you know, on the football field, to me, like, his hand usage is elite. When you talk about a pass rusher being active, like, I feel like he embodies that trait, activeness with his hands. Like, he never stops chopping his hands. He never stops, you know, slapping, cross chops, hump moves, swim moves.
We love a hump move.
Dip and rip. Like, he has like the whole repertoire of like pass rush moves, and he uses them really well to like play off of each other from one snap to the next. He has a plan. He's very like mature when it comes to sort of like scheming out how he's going to, you know, keep offensive tackles on their toes. And that, I actually saw this from PFF, in true pass set situations. So on plays where it wasn't like a quick screen or a quick pass, and plays where it wasn't a run play or whatever, like basically true pass rush situations, he had a 41% win rate, which was best in the country. You know, this is a guy who is absolutely tenacious, never stops, and wins regularly when he's given the chance to like pin his ears back and go. So not only that, he, like you mentioned, good run defender. I think his hand usage is also a huge, you know, huge strength of his in run defense. Like, he's really good at stacking a defender, kind of keeping them off his body and then shedding the block and getting to the guy that's coming into his area kind of deal. And so he's really good with his hands. He doesn't get blocked out of a play. He doesn't get stymied or stalemated at the point of attack. He's just really, really, like I said before, active. That's like the word I would just really use for him. So really good player. Of course, there's question marks with the medicals, but that's why he's probably going to be at 22. If he is at 22, it's because of the medical concerns, not because of what he does on the field, in my opinion.
Yeah. And some of the leaking on like why are the Eagles trading Hassan Reddick, why are they trying to trade Josh Sweat, is that they were really frustrated with some of the run defense and some of the effort on the back half of last season, which, having watched those players for multiple seasons, I'm extremely confident a lot of that is the result of hating Matt Patricia and feeling like the season was chalked. Yeah. But if a big thing for that building now is we need high effort players on the defensive trenches, buddy, Latu.
Yep.
High effort player. That is going to be a culture fit if that's something that they're prioritizing. Okay, we're going to let advertisers sell you things. That way you spend money. So that way you support us. And that way we feed our families. And then we're going to come back and talk more introductions for potential Eagles first round targets. FanDuel is putting the ball in your court for the rest of the NBA season, because right now new customers get $200 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $200 if your bet wins. Looking at the Tuesday slate of NBA games, I do like the Mavericks -104 on the money line, traveling to Sacramento. I think that's a takeover game for Luka. And the Pelicans, with how well they've been playing as late, at home, -102 on the money line against the Thunder. So bet on the NBA with a wide range of bet types, including quick bets, live same game parlays, player props, and more. And the wait is over, North Carolina. FanDuel is officially live in the Tar Heel State. So visit FanDuel.com/RingerPhilly and make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit theringer.com/RG. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at Empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
We return! Hello, Danny. Okay, I've done three names. You said Latu was on your list as well. So now you've done three names. We each have potentially two names left. DK, who is your fourth intro for the Eagles?
So basically, just running it back here, I'm going to say Jared Verse. I know that you're not as high on Jared Verse as maybe some of the NFL draft intelligentsia, as it were. But I do think, for all the reasons that we basically laid out, he makes some sense for the Eagles. He's a really, really high effort, explosive, tenacious pass rusher. He's got a little bit of extra size that you don't see from some of the pass rushers already on the Eagles right now, so he adds that to it. He's a 6'4", 254. So not like huge, but he's big, thick, muscular guy. Like he's the type of player who can like hold his ground, sets the edge, but he's also a power rusher, just never quits, very tenacious. A lot of the same, I don't like him as much as Latu, but a lot of the same traits as Latu, and just since he just never quits, he's one of the most tenacious, high-energy pass rushers in this draft. So he adds a little bit of like an intimidation factor on the defensive line. So this is the reason that I like him for the Eagles. I think he kind of, you know, gives them something they don't exactly have. He's also good against the run. 24 stops, according to PFF. So I'm kind of with you in the sense that I don't like love him as much as some people in the NFL draft community do. But I do think he's going to be a solid player at the NFL level.
Yeah, so you were right to say, like DK and I, like I said, talking about the NFL draft all the times. We've talked about a lot of these prospects. I'm not as high on Verse as the rest of the community is. Mm-hmm. He's on my list, and the thing is, like we often talk about him as like, what if he went 8 to the Falcons? You know, what if he went like 14 to the Saints? I'm like, I don't know. 22 is still up there for me, if we're being honest. But I do think like back end of the first round is where you start talking about a player like Verse. And so like maybe this is like a little bit rich, but like I would not super mind it at 22. Like this starts to be where
Do you know where I have him ranked?
Where do you have him?
22.
incredible. The accuracy.
There we
go. If you go and you look at like last year, Miles Murphy goes 28 to the Bengals. Felix Anudike Uzoma, 31 to the Chiefs. The year previous, 26. The Jets get Jermaine Johnson, who actually has developed pretty nicely for them. 21. Right. In the year 21, Quiddy Pay went 21 to the Colts. Peyton Turner went 28 to the Saints. The year before that, Kalavon Chasen at 20 to the Jaguars. That you obviously mixed bag there, but in like the 20s and beyond, you start talking about, you know, edge rushers who, all right, like, you know, Quiddy Pay is not an elite player. Jermaine Johnson is not, like, you know, inciting terror. Miles Murphy did not break the rotation for the Bengals, but you have the ideal frame. You have good athletics. You have college production. You take a gamble on those guys, and you're hoping to get a Quiddy Pay. Quiddy had 8 sacks for the Colts this past year, right? You're hoping to get a player who can be a part of a rotation.
You don't know who I compared him to?
Quiddy Pay?
Yeah.
It's a good comp, right?
22 and Quiddy Pay. It just works out really perfectly for our purposes here. Yes.
Now, one thing that I will say, because I have also, when I've watched Verse, written down Quiddy Pay's name, because I think build-wise, like, Pay is 6'2", 260. There's some similarities there to Verse, who is not the 6'4 that he was listed at coming out of college. I'm trying to remember. I'm pulling up his mock draft right now. Verse measured in. Yeah, okay, 6'4", 254. He actually was. It was taller. I thought he was going to be shorter than that. But Quiddy Pay, like 6'2", 261. Pay was a scary explosive athlete, right? Yeah. We're talking 4.57, 40-yard dash. We're talking a 36-inch vertical jump. Like, I don't think that I see that level of explosiveness on Verse's film. I'm a little bit suspicious of some of his getting off the ball, and I think there's some snap jumping there. In totality, though, like, the ability to play strong, play low, and then explode through a tackle and win with power, like, that's absolutely there. So I do think he has like an 8 sack a year sort of a guy. And again, like, that's what you just got from Quiddy Pay. That starts to make sense to me at 22. I don't think the ceiling is as high as it is with Latu. The effort, I agree, is good. I don't think, honestly, like, the run defense is as good as Latu is. I don't think the hand usage is as good as Latu is. But still, this is the sort of pick I could see the Eagles making, because he's going to scratch their itch for explosiveness. He's going to scratch their itch for effort. He's going to be able to play that bigger end role, like I talked about with Leotu Latu. Yeah, like, Verse, absolutely. Like, while he's not my cup of tea, for sure feels like a pick the Eagles can make at 22.
Yeah, I think so. I actually had written down in my scouting report here, like, he occasionally is a beat slow to diagnose where the ball is gone. He overplays his gap and gets inside against runs, letting them spill to the edge. So he's not perfect, and that's why I have him at 22. But I just think overall, like you said, big, strong, powerful, tenacious, and above average athlete, like a pretty good athlete. So just there's a lot of things to like. I don't think he's a perfect, super, super high ceiling prospect, but I think he's a good player who is going to, like, be a productive player on your defensive line.
Yeah, this is a veggies and rice pick where it's like, you got like, I get it, you got to do it. It's not going to get me up out of my seat. But hey, Nolan Smith got me up out of my seat last year and then didn't jack diddly. So sometimes you got to have your veggies in your
rice. Are we out on him now? Is he dead to you?
I like, Nolan was super fun as a prospect, and like the athleticism, crazy, whatever. I was always worried about a 240-pound edge, right? I think, like, if he's going to work, it was never going to work be in year one, because he was always going to need to get bigger. And so I'm curious to see what he looks like in year two, what he looks like in year three, and kind of going from there. He cannot play in the league at 239. And that was always, again, that was always the case with Nolan. So he went at 30 because he was a developmental guy. Mm-hmm. And now you go from there. Okay. So yeah, I had Verse on my list. I'll bring up the last name on my list. I do have a couple of honorable mentions I can get to as well at the end.
Sweet.
But I do think that we cannot do this list without mentioning the best name in the 2024 NFL draft.
Yeah.
Which is Kool-Aid McKinstry.
I have him on my list as well.
Excellent. Yeah.
We see eye to eye on a lot of these.
Yeah. So the Cooper DeJean, the corner out of Alabama, out of Iowa, we started this introduction with. I do think that that's the better player here. But Kool-Aid McKinstry is also, I think, some of your typical back end of the first round cornerback. He was kind of expected to be the top guy for Alabama. He was like a top 20 prospect in his class, right? He started as a freshman. Like, this was kind of meant to be the dude. Mm-hmm. And then over the course of his final season there, like, Terrion Arnold, who's, I think, going to go like top 10, top 15, really started to emerge from Alabama. It took a little bit of the shine off of Kool-Aid McKinstry, who I think just lost the man coverage a little bit more frequently, struggled to find the ball a little bit more, like, just didn't have like the suffocating presence that Arnold did. But it honestly, like, it, when you go and you just watch Kool-Aid in a vacuum, You're like, oh, I remember why this guy was projected to be a first round, like, you know, a top 10, top 15 pick. I remember why this guy is going to be a first round pick. This is still the exact sort of guy you want to draft at corner. He's 6'1", he's 195. He's got good length. He's got great range. He has good makeup speed. I don't think he's an elite athlete. I think he's an above average athlete across the board. And I think that's what you're looking for at your corner two position, mm-hmm. which is, this is more of a corner two than it is like a future corner one. He has obviously like a ton of experience against SEC receivers. He did play against top wide receivers and have some success after the LSU game. Like, they tried to pick on him and he had his downs, but he also had his ups. Like, there's film with McKinstry handling guys who are going to be drafted in the first round. Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas. Like, there's still a good profile here, even though he's the second best corner on his team. The name Kool-Aid, all right, given to him by his grandmother. He was born smiling. And so since he was such a happy baby, big smiles, his grandma was like, yep, Kool-Aid man, which is that's a very funny, like, I that's a great story. Kool-Aid man's honestly not like, I don't think of the Kool-Aid man as like always smiling. The Kool-Aid man is a little bit more famous for jumping through the brick walls.
Oh yeah.
So that's what's funny to me is I'm just like, oh, that's right, the Kool-Aid man also has a permanent smile. I forgot about that,
right?
But yeah, so name is Kool-Aid, born smiling,
most he important also, yep,
yeah, he also has a Chucky doll named Juice. And the Chucky doll is not allowed to come to his games in college. It's not allowed to be on the sideline, but he had it like throughout all of high school because he and Chucky are both killers. That's the logic there. And so his mom brings it to every game. And so in terms of personality and vibe, I would very much like for Kool-Aid McKinstry to be a Philadelphia Eagle because I would enjoy hearing stories and rooting for him. But altogether, yeah, now this is the sort of guy who can, I think, walk in as the favorite for the outside corner two job over James Bradbury, over Kelee Ringo. Like, less versatility than DeJean. Like, I think a lower ceiling than DeJean, but still the sort of guy you expect to become a starting corner in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. I think size, physicality. He's another guy that's very good in run defense. He'll come up and make a big hit. Like, he's looking to deal out punishment. He's not just a, you know, drag down tackler where he's trying to bite ankles and things like that. He's like a guy that wants to like hit. And I think that physicality and the tenacity is infectious in the defensive secondary. So like, he brings that swagger that you're looking for essentially. And obviously, like you said, the name is really cool. His backstory is really cool. He's a former five-star guy, so he's, you know, played in the bright lights. He's got that experience. He, you know, it's not too big for him. So there's a lot of things to really like about him. I think you're right that he's like maybe not the most explosive athlete, which is what I think separates him from guys like Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean in terms of like the bigger corners in this class. But he's a really good player. He's only 21 years old right now, so I don't know. He's got a really high ceiling. I like this pick a lot for him. It just makes a lot of sense. Again, if they do go corner and kind of change their strategy, I think it makes a ton of sense. He's projected to be there in most mock drafts that I see. So this connection makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, it's that I don't have concerns about his athleticism in the NFL level. He very clearly to me clears the bar of like, this is an NFL caliber corner.
Right,
he can be a starting caliber corner. It's just like when Arnold gets burned on one side of the field, like when he loses the line of scrimmage, you see Arnold get on his horse and get back into phase and you're like, holy smokes. You see Kool-Aid do it and he doesn't get there as quickly. He doesn't recover as fast. You're like, okay, that's the difference between like a blue chip player goes, you know, at 8 overall to the Falcons, and more of like a red chip player is going to go 22 overall to the Eagles. So it just sucks that he happened to be on his team. Right? Like, you could put Cooper DeJean on Alabama, he'd have been the second best corner. You put Nate Wiggins out of Clemson, Alabama, he would have been the second best corner. Kool-Aid just suffers a little bit from the relative measure. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up underdrafted accordingly just because he's the second best corner on his team, but still, I think he's the dude. I think he's the man. All right, so that's everybody that we had on our respective lists. I had Cooper DeJean, Troy Fontenot, Leatu Latu, Kool-Aid McKinstry, and Jared Verse. The only one we didn't share was I had Troy Fontenot and you had Jackson Paris Johnson. Is that right?
Yep.
Yep. All right. So
we're like really in line on a lot of these.
4 for 5. Yeah. So we have a good consensus on who the Eagles should be targeting. Do you have any dark horse names? Any names that you thought about putting on and then didn't put on? A little sneaky thought in the back of your head?
Yeah. The one guy that comes to my mind, which just feels so Eaglesy, is if Brock Bowers is sitting there at 22, like they just have to draft him at that point. Just based on this is a blue chip talent that fell because of extenuating circumstances. It's like very similar to me in my mind as to the reason why they signed Saquon Barkley. It's like, look, we can have a blue chip talent at the running back position for like the price of like a wide receiver 3. Like, we might as well just do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you're getting, if Brock Bowers is there at 22, and there's, I think, a reasonable chance he falls into the teens and early 20s, just based on positional value, perceived provisional positional value at the tight end position. He's a little bit undersized, so there's going to be, I think, some question marks about from coaches and from teams about like how exactly are we going to deploy this guy? Is he just a gadget player? Is he going to be an inline blocker for us? Is he going to fit our offense? And I think there's, you're eliminating some teams that might want to take Brock Bowers based on like his specific niche as a playmaker, as a position, like as a tweener between a tight end and a receiver. So, you know, these are all stupid reasons for me to pass up on Brock Bowers. I think he's a top 10 talent in this class.
Right.
But you know, GMs are going to have to look at this like, hey, if we draft this guy, he's going to be immediately one of the highest paid tight ends in the NFL. And yeah, he has to like live up to that. This isn't going to get us a lot of positional value. Whereas like if you draft a receiver in the top 10, you get that player on a really bargain basement deal for 4 years. Whereas if you draft Brock Bowers and he's a really good tight end, you're like paying him like a really good tight end. So, if he falls, can't you just see Howie being like, okay, that's enough. Like we get a blue chip player here. It doesn't really matter what position he is.
So yes, but also if you thought too many mouths to feed was a problem before with Dallas Goedert, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, drop a first round draft of Brock Bowers tight end in there. It's going to at least one of the four players is going to end every game with like two targets. And if the Eagles lose, it'll be like, because he only got two targets.
Yeah. But you're not, are you going to get like Devontae Smith, like going and storming into the coaches? I feel like AJ Brown will do that and that's fine. Yeah. But
well, Devontae, so like they have 1 year left on Devontae's deal and then the fifth year option and whatever. Like they're starting to talk about extension with him. And so if they extend him and draft Brock Bowers, it's like, okay, you have,
see, this is politics now we're talking about. Like if you're wanting the best team on the field, like you want to go for the 49ers and like knock them off their block or whatever. Like,
dude, Brock plus Goddard plus AJ plus Devontae plus Saquon would be so freaking
cool. I mean, logically, it maybe doesn't make sense, but it would be so fun and it makes so things
it'd
so
be
much
terrifying.
Easier for Jalen Hurts. Like he could just, you know, and one of the interesting things I think about Brock Bowers is they used him so much behind the line of scrimmage. Like he was, you know, on sweeps, on screen plays, little swing passes. You know, he lined up in the backfield every once in a while. He's that type of player where he's just so twitchy and so physical and athletic that he could be, you know, essentially like a Deebo Samuel type player. And
yeah, so I was going to say the best thing about Dallas Goedert as a receiver is his yards after the catch. Like Goddard actually breaks tackles.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Generates explosives pretty well. Him and Brock Bowers, dude. That's
which
that's
side?
A,
yeah.
That's
which
a lot
side
of ball.
Do you line up?
That's a lot of ball in hand play for your tight ends right there. You're just throwing it to the flat and asking the big boys to go break some tackles. Plus Saquon plus AJ, dude. I mean, like, listen, if they make the pick, I'll be like, I don't get it. And then within 5 minutes, I'll talk myself into it.
But it's going to be fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's my take.
I do think that they are going to be cognizant of a Brock Bowers fall, right? They're just going to, as they model the draft, they're going to be like, what if he gets to us? What should we do? That's not to say they're going to pick him, but like I think there are worlds where Brock Bowers starts to get into the 20s. And at that point, it's going to be like, okay, someone's got to come get this guy. Like, this is a great, great talent. Should it be us? Right, exactly. Yeah, I almost had Graham Barton down, who's the dude.
He was my backup. Yeah, he was my backup guy.
So if Troy Fonten is going top 20 as DK promises, if you're not making it past the Seahawks at 16, then the next guy who's the college tackle who played guard who's going to play guard in the league is Graham Barton. I think Barton's less of an impressive mover, and I think it's like less sexy, it's less exciting. Maybe Jeff Stoutland feels like, nah, just go get me like a really great athlete in round three. So I had Barton's name down as a potential dude for them. I tried to talk myself into getting a linebacker here, like getting a Junior Colson out of Michigan or Edgerton Cooper out of Texas A&M, and I just hated it so much that I was like, yeah, no chance. I just don't think any of them are good enough, and I'm unconvinced that the Eagles will ever invest in the position, and so kind of left that in and of itself. Defensive tackle, you lose Fletcher Cox to retirement, so now you have Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis as the starter. Milton Williams, Marlon Tuipulotu, and Mauro Ojomo behind them. I think they have the youth and the talent that they want. I don't think that they're a first-round defensive tackle team. I do think that if Byron Murphy out of Texas or Jerzon Newton out of Illinois makes it to them, they might reconsider whether or not they're a first-round defensive tackle team. But in general, I don't think they're going to be that overall. And so, yeah. That's what I'm looking at in terms of first round Eagles draft prospects. DK, thank you very much for introing some of these guys here to the Eagles faithful. I know I've already plugged the stuff, Ringer NFL Draft Show, NFL Draft Show, TheRinger.com. Anything else? Any people got to find you, check you out, do the stuff, do the good things?
Yeah, so NFL Draft of TheRinger.com is where the draft guide is. We have mock drafts done by Solak, High Fitz, and I. We're going to have a team needs section coming up here so you can take a look at like what each team needs and try to like guess what's going to happen in the draft. We got the Ringer NFL Draft Show twice a week. We've got the live show coming up in Detroit. I think there are a handful of tickets still left to go check that out. And yeah, and then obviously I'm on Twitter at Danny B. Kelly.
Nice. All right. Thank you, DK. Yeah, come listen to Ringer NFL Draft Show if you enjoy talking about the prospects. We have a good time there. We talk about all these guys and way more. For the Philly feed in particular, we're going to have Chris on, I think, later this week, Thursday, talking some Sixers stuff. Very depressing, but whatever. Shields on vacation this week. Obviously, he'll be back next week as the Phillies season kicks off. Go Phils! And yeah, I appreciate DK for helping out. Thank you to Cliff Augustine for producing the episode. As always, producer Cliff is the man. And we will catch you next week here on the Ringers Philly Special.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.